From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Right-wing violence that began after student-led protests over pension reform proposals in Nicaragua last April continued over the weekend. Telesur's correspondent Maria Jose Diaz filed this report from the city of Masaya, where the Old Town Market, a tourist site known for its souvenir and craft shops, was devastated by fire on Saturday.
It's a day of relative calm at this time, but the atmosphere remains tense. This Saturday in the city of Masaya, about 30 kilometers from the capital, Managua, numerous protesters set fire to buildings in the commercial center, including private houses and a market, that burned in neighborhoods in cases similar to what we've seen since the crisis started on April 18th. They also committed violent acts against the national police delegation in this municipality in protest of the great amount of violence committed against the population. The national police arrested some of the protesters and obtained an arsenal that included a shotgun, pistols, bombs, and gas. The action in Masaya destroyed various neighborhoods in 10 consecutive attacks, robberies, and fires in public buildings, and more than 140 businesses have reported incidences.
And we have further details with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, reporting from Managua via Skype on Tuesday. We left off on the question of who are the local allies of the people that these so-called lefties here in the West are supporting, the left opposition to the Sandinistas, as they're starting to phrase it here.
Yeah, and at the end of our last program, Don, our last conversation, I think I managed to get in that one of the main components of the opposition to the government here that have been supporting and financing the opposition activities, paramilitary activities, principally against the government, was the corporate sector. And in the corporate sector, and I think we mentioned an individual called Piero Cohen, who is the wealthiest man in Nicaragua by a long way, and Forbes magazine reckons that he's the seventh wealthiest person in Central America. And his interests are mainly financial, and so he's not affected by, you know, if there's a drop in Nicaragua's GDP or its productive economy, he's not going to be affected by
right.
that, because his main interest is financial. And obviously, as a sophisticated financial operator, he can protect his wealth via hedge funds and other similar investments.
Yeah, those guys, as a matter of fact, they tend to be more inclined to benefit from the short-term benefits of looting than to see the economy develop further, because they can just grab that money and throw it somewhere else.
Yeah, and they'll take the classic Goldman Sachs view, and what we'll bet both ways, so whichever way we win.
Right, that's right.
And Goldman Sachs is to advise their investors with bad advice, so that their own Goldman Sachs investments would do well when that bad
right.
advice came to pass. You know, and that's how finance operates in Wall Street finance and City of London finance and Frankfurt in Germany finance. That's how they operate. They never lose. So and so you have Piero Cohen now, and so obviously liberals and leftists and progressives in North America and Western Europe need to ask themselves, well, are we really on the side of Piero Cohen, who is not just a finance shark, he's also a very vehement Zionist.
Right.
And so that's another reason why he's currently attacking the Nicaraguan government.
Right.
Because Nicaragua is a stalwart defender of the rights of the people of Palestine.
Right.
And so, in fact, Piero Cohen used to be an ambassador of between, I think it was 2008 and 2011, he was an ambassador for the Nicaraguan government with responsibility for Israel. And that's just part of, you know, the history of what's been going on in Nicaragua over the last 10 years is of the Sandinista government trying to build bridges to the opposition, and because they take seriously the idea of national reconciliation and unity. But then when they tried to implement measures, as they did in April last, that actually defended ordinary workers and ordinary pensioners, despite all the propaganda to the contrary, and the Nicaraguan elites and the regional corporate elites resisted that and decided that they'd side with the forces trying to overthrow the government.
Right.
And that's a key component of what's been happening ever since April the 18th. So you have Piero Cohen, and then I think we also managed to talk a little bit about Carlos Pellas, who's one of the wealthiest people here in Nicaragua. And he's somebody that has benefited from agreements that were made in order to give him tax and import tariff benefits with the previous government, before the Sandinista government.
Right.
And now all those are up for grabs, because there's an urgent need. There's an urgent need for social security reform, but there's also perhaps an even more urgent need for tax reform.
Right.
And that was all coming up for discussion, or has been in discussion over the last 6, 12, 18 months. Mm. And because the government took the positions that it did, trying to defend ordinary people, the right-wing politicians and the corporate elites that tend to side with them and tend to be allied with them, resisted that and decided to try and overthrow the government. And Carlos Pellas is part of that, because he risked losing the very substantial tax and tariff benefits that he had negotiated with the previous government.
Right.
Back, you know, we were talking about 10, 11, 12 years ago. So now, leftists in North America, leftists in Western Europe need to look at that, and they need to say, well, how can we reasonably support an opposition movement whose part of whose main components are the corporate elites here in Nicaragua? That's a question they need to look at and decide about.
Right.
So then what are the other components of the Nicaraguan opposition? The other components of the Nicaraguan opposition are perhaps not necessarily in this order, but you have the right-wing church hierarchy, of course, are vehemently opposed to abortion.
To abortion rights. And also, you know, it's an interesting thing, because one of the criticisms of the so-called lefties here is that the Sandinista government has betrayed progressive values by accommodating some of the positions of the church, which does, by the way, have a majority of the population as communicants.
Yeah, and so then you get into a quite complicated discussion of, well, what is democracy?
Right.
And do you accept a majority view even though you disagree with it?
Right.
You know, and do all these leftists in North America and liberals in North America and Western Europe accept the fact that there is a natural political majority in Nicaragua against abortion rights?
Right.
And do they accept that as Democrats?
And then you also have to balance, you know, okay, you have, say, a natural political constituency against abortion rights and a natural political constituency for socialism. Do you say, well, the hell with socialism, we got to prioritize things and make sure we have our abortion rights secure?
Yeah, and that gives you some idea of how complicated the internal political composition of Nicaraguan society is.
Right.
And it also explains why back in 2006, in the run-up to the 2006 election, the FSLN left the vote on, because at that time the Catholic Church mobilized massive demonstrations. Some estimates put the demonstrations in Managua over 200,000 people busting from across the country against abortion. So then, in that context, and if what is the FSLN supposed to do? Are they supposed to stand up and say, even though they don't necessarily believe it, that they're opposed to abortion. And what they did, in fact, was in the vote, there was a vote in the National Assembly controlled by the opposition back in 2006. And in that vote, the FSLN said to their deputies, well, look, we're not going to impose a line on you. You vote according to your conscience. Mm. And in that vote in the National Assembly, something like 20 to 25 FSLN deputies supported the opposition motion to end abortion rights in Nicaragua. That was the vote. Mm. And then when the FSLN came to power, or at least took office, because they didn't take power in January 2007. Daniel Ortega became the president, but that didn't, you know, he was still faced with an opposition that controlled the National Assembly, for example. Anyway, and when they took office, they implemented a policy that within the limitations, the very strict limitations of the law that was passed against abortion, whenever it was, 2006, whenever it was, they allowed doctors and nurses as much latitude as they possibly could in terms of their daily practice in relation to gynecological cases involving the possible need for abortion. And that is what has enabled the government to dramatically lower maternal mortality since 2007. And it's that kind of pragmatic policy of accepting the legislation but doing everything that you can within it to go against the legislation and protect the lives of women.
Right.
So anyway, and I'm going back to our theme of, you know, who are the Western left and progressives aligned with. They are currently aligned with right-wing bishops who deny women the right to abortion.
Right.
And so you have that contradiction, too, in terms of another important component of the opposition, which are the ex-Sandinistas, the embittered ex-Sandinistas, who still claim that they defend the ideals of Sandino. But it's difficult to see how they can do that when they're paid by the United States government.
Well, this is like we saw in the 80s. We had the same among the Contras. You had some that were from the Sandinista group who said that they either the dominant faction wasn't moving fast enough or was moving too fast, wasn't allied enough with the socialist bloc, was too closely identified with the socialist bloc, etc. So but let me just go flesh out a teeny bit more the last thing that we were discussing, which is the fact that the very same left that criticizes the Sandinista government for accommodating the sensibilities of the church are in bed with the most extreme right-wing anti-abortion forces of the church in the current protests and in the opposition to the government.
Yeah, and you've got, and here they're called the MRS, the Movimiento Renovador Sandinista.
Right.
And who are the leaders of that? Well, you have former General Hugo Torres. You have former health minister under the revolutionary government in the 80s, Dora Maria Tellez. You have former Sandinista journalist Carlos Fernando Chamorro. You have former Sandinista comandante Luis Carrion. Various other people, very strongly associated with the Sandinista government in the 1980s. And the irony is that they were the most radical. They tended to be the most radical Marxist-Leninists back in the 1980s, anti-imperialist, anti-church. Whereas Daniel Ortega, as an individual, it was back in the 80s that he converted to what is now a very strong evangelical Christian faith, although that's a biographical thing to do with Daniel. Daniel himself is a very you could talk about him for hours and hours and hours about the contradictions in his life and so forth. But and the nitty gritty of these ex-Sandinistas is that for all their avowed radicalism, they are now being paid by the United States, and they depend on United States and European Union funding and funding from European Union governments to be able to maintain their level of opposition. The last opinion polls prior to the current crisis, they as a group, the MRS, had under 1% support nationally. And so that is why they have opted for this insurrectional attempt to stage a coup against the government of Daniel Ortega.
Right.
And in their desperation, they have allied with the most right-wing corporate interests here in Nicaragua. They've aligned with the most right-wing ecclesiastical interests here in Nicaragua. And they've accepted the direction of, or the strong support of, right-wing politicians like Ileana Ros-Lehtinen, who's now not in Congress, as I understand it,
right.
Marco Rubio, Bob Menendez, and they have the outright support of Mike Pence. No, and so how can these kind of four ex-Sandinistas in the MRS claim to represent anything remotely progressive? And the other section within, associated very closely with the MRS, are radicals like Monica Baltadano and Henry Ruiz, former Comandante Modesto back in the 80s. And they too are aligned with all these interests that we've been talking about over the last 10, 15 minutes. But they still manage to fool their foreign supporters, who are mainly left-wingers in Europe, not North America, to some extent North America. But the main support for Monica Baltadano and her NGO, which is an NGO called Popol Na, which tends to focus on environmental issues, their main support comes from Europe. Now, all those left-wingers are being entirely fooled by Monica Baltadano and have been for years. But they should be able to ask themselves, hang on a minute, why is Monica Baltadano and why are Henry Ruiz aligning themselves with these right-wing corporate interests? They're aligning themselves with the right-wing ecclesiastical church, Catholic Church. They're aligning themselves with ex-Sandinistas who accept funding directly from the United States, from the National Endowment for Democracy, from the National Democratic Institute, from the International Republican Institute. You know, why are Monica Baltadano and these supposed left-wing ex-Sandinistas who've been expelled from the FSLN and were, you know, for over almost 20 years, why are we supporting these people? And that is a question they need to ask themselves. So then, the three main political components of the Nicaraguan opposition. But then, associated with that, who are maintaining the roadblocks? Who are maintaining the roadblocks, and who have attacked 23 schools across the country, damaging them and burning them down? And who are maintaining the roadblocks so that around 5 people now have died, including a newborn baby and her mother, because the roadblocks didn't let those patients through to receive the medical attention that they required in time? You know, so who are these people maintaining the roadblocks? And the answer to that is, well, they're paid paramilitaries. They're paid delinquents associated with organized crime. Practically zero of those individuals are people that could be described as students. So although the initial crisis began with what were perfectly legitimate student protests, however misguided they may have been, they were legitimate, peaceful protests against the proposed social security reform. But within 24 hours, those protests had been hijacked by armed extremists of the ex-Sandinista MRS associated with organized crime, very carefully planned, largely financed by the United States government and local corporate interests. Now, how do you fund the mortar rounds that cost $3 each, and you're firing thousands and thousands of them over a period of a few days.
Right.
How do you fund that? How do you fund bottles of water, just to take the most mundane example? Right. If you're engaged in violent protests in a tropical country at a time when there weren't, before the rains had set in, you know, people need water. And on the streets, the only way of getting that water is bottled water. So how do you fund all that bottled water? You know, you're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, just for basic logistics. How do you fund transport to send 200 or 300 armed extremists from Managua and León to Esteli to attack the Alcaldía, or to Granada to attack the Alcaldía as the municipal office? Those gangs attacked Granada, they attacked Esteli, they attacked Chinandega, they attacked Catarina, they attacked Diriá, they attacked in Masaya, they repeatedly attacked police stations in Masaya, Matagalpa, and Inotega. How do you fund that? You know, we're now at, what are we, Don? It started on April the 18th. We're now at what, June the 6th?
Yeah, it's June 5th, so, you know, you've got a month and a half.
And so there are all those questions that people in the United States and Western Europe who have been deceived by the opposition media need to kind of start rationally thinking about.
Yeah.
And then on the theme of the international media and corporate media here, and right now there's a massive media offensive inside Nicaragua, because the theme of Nicaragua has come up in the Organization of American States, which is holding its annual meeting. I've forgotten what the event is, but it's some meeting of the Organization of American States with all the foreign ministers and so forth, in a general assembly of the Organization of American States. Now, in that assembly, of course, the main theme has been Venezuela. And Jorge Arreaza, the Venezuelan foreign minister, has put out a video that we've put out on our website at Tortilla Con Sal, if people are interested in it. A very interesting video in which Jorge Arreaza, the Venezuelan foreign minister, completely dismantles all the ridiculous arguments against Venezuela coming from the OAS. But I'm sticking with Nicaragua. In the OAS, Nicaragua has triumphantly defeated all attempts to try and make its internal crisis a part of the main agenda of the OAS General Assembly. And I think the three countries that tried to put the crisis in Nicaragua on the OAS agenda yesterday were the United States, Canada, and Colombia. Having said that, let's go back to who are the main components of the opposition here. One of the leaders of the business sector here in the so-called Civic Alliance, which has nothing civic about it at all,
right,
but that's what they call themselves, is a guy called Michael Healy. Michael Healy is the president of an agricultural owner's organization called UPANIG, and he alleges that he represents that sector of opinion in Nicaragua, but that is completely false. Who is Michael Healy? Michael Healy is the general manager of a sugar refining plant down in the south of Nicaragua, in Rivas, and the owners of that plant are Colombian investors.
Right.
That is who Michael Healy is representing in the national dialogue. He's not in representing the interests of local Nicaraguan wealthy farmers. He's representing the foreign interests of Colombian investors, who, of course, are desperate to oust the Nicaraguan government. Partly because the Nicaraguan government successfully recuperated and recovered 90,000 square kilometers of maritime territory that the Colombians had usurped for over 70 years. They did that in 2013 in the International Court of Justice. But partly, they're interested in displacing people like Carlos Pellas. Now, that is one of the reasons why the opposition is extremely weak in the current situation, because internally they're deeply divided.
Right.
You have people like Michael Healy, who represent Colombian interests. Now, he came to the fore displacing the nominal leader of the Nicaragua's business association, closely associated with Carlos Pellas. And what does that mean? It means that the Colombians, and also organized crime, of course, from Colombia and elsewhere, Mexico, who have suffered repeated multi-million losses at the hands of the Nicaraguan army and police, those interests are trying to displace the indigenous interests, if you like, of the native interests, the native oligarch's interests of people like Carlos Pellas. And that is why you have this fierce internal argument inside the Civic Alliance, inside the Nicaraguan opposition, because their contradictions could not survive the first few weeks of the attempt to overthrow the Sandinista government here.
Mm-mm.
And so what is the Nicaraguan government strategy at the moment? The Nicaraguan government strategy at the moment is to sit tight, insist on nonviolence. The bishops told the government there'll be no dialogue if you don't keep the police off the streets. What did the government say? They said, all right, we'll keep the police off the streets. Now, the price that the ordinary population has to pay for that is high in terms of insecurity.
Right.
But as a strategy, it is designed to make it impossible for ordinary Nicaraguans not to see that all those components of the opposition that we've been talking about,
right,
the corporate oligarchy here in Nicaragua, the right-wing ecclesiastical bishops, individuals like Michael Healy who are allied with, who represent foreign interests, organized crime that are paying for the delinquents that man the roadblocks, along with people like Piero Cohen who have also financed that. And ordinary people in Nicaragua can see what's going on. Now, while the opposition media here are able to project their incredible lies, downright insane lies, to the outside world and have the outside world accept that and believe that, here in Nicaragua, things are very different. And it's almost a carbon copy of what's happened in Venezuela.
Mm.
So if you look at what happened in Venezuela, I don't know if you agree, but my reading of this is, of what happened in Venezuela, is that Nicolas Maduro and his government trusted the Nicaraguan people, invested all their efforts in defending the basic interests of ordinary people in Venezuela. And they were rewarded by the massive vote in their favor,
right,
in, what is it now, four elections?
Yeah, the last four elections.
The Constituent Assembly, the regional government, the municipal elections, and now the recent presidential election.
That's right.
Four elections.
Yep, that's right.
They've been massively vindicated.
Yep.
And that is the same policy that the Nicaraguan government is implementing here.
And, you know, on the other side of it, and we've got about a minute left, but on the other side of it, the same division among the opposition that you're describing in Nicaragua, a condition that's plagued the right wing in Venezuela from the get-go as well. You have so many, wannabe petty tyrants, basically, I must be the center of attention, whatever, as the face of various sectors of the opposition. And then I guess the interests of the various sectors of the opposition are just such where they have a very hard time acting in coalition, and they do some outrageous things that can do nothing but undercut their position, like, for example, firing on or crashing helicopters into the Supreme Court while complaining against terrorism. It's, so I'd like to thank you for the last couple of conversations that we've had, well, for all of them, but in particularly these last couple, and look forward to speaking with you again later in the week if that's possible.
Okay, Don, thanks very much. Likewise.
Thanks. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.